My name is Suzanne LeGrand, and I'm here with three advocates for vocational education, Michael Birch, Sal Castaneda Jr., and Nate Washul. To start, I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about what you do and why, starting with Michael.
My job is community relations and outreach, and part of that is teaching educators, teaching kids and parents about the opportunities that exist in the construction trades. My specific area is carpentry, but all the trades offer great careers if they're union trades. My mission, my passion is to work with any and everyone who will listen about the opportunities that exist, and that this is the other four-year college. You don't have to pay to go to a four-year, five-year college and owe money. You can earn money as you go. It's on-the-job training, and it's education for life. Great benefits, great pay, and great retirement, great pension.
My name is Salvador Castaneda Jr., and I'm a program advisor and outreach coordinator at Portland Community College for Swan Island Trade Center, Apprenticeship, Trades, and Welding Departments. My job is to reach out to the community, to high schools, community-based organizations, and industry partners, and make the connections for our students, for our students to come in, or prospective students to come into our programs, connect them to our programs, and like Michael was saying, talk to them about the benefits of what I like to say, not the other four-year degree, but the original four-year degree. Is what I tell them. Before there were diplomas issued, there was apprenticeship. And a lot of times they can also earn a degree that is also paid for by the apprenticeship program going union.
So my name is Nate Washul, and my role is a vice president of partnerships at a local community-based organization, nonprofit called All Hands Raised. Our mission really is to say, you know, our schools aren't going to achieve the goals that we all have for our kids by themselves. And so how do we build a vision as an entire community of really supporting kids and families from cradle through career? As we began really looking at data to say, how can we better support our kids at key milestones? This whole milestone, or this chasm that happens after 12th grade, really started to come into clearer focus. And when you look at what our schools have offered kids in preparation for that leap, where we tell them, you know, off you go, good luck, over a period of 15, 20 years, we really have kind of seen a perfect storm when it comes to dismantling high school as a path to career. So, you know, when major property tax limitations were implemented in the mid-90s, the bottom dropped out of school funding in a lot of ways. At the same time, sort of an upswing in the concept that if you care about kids, you're sending them to college. If you care about these kids, you have the highest expectations, I'm doing air quotes, for them, which is a four-year degree. So while funding was dropping in our schools, there was a rise in this traditional college-only mentality, as well as a rise in, you know, it's about your math scores and your English scores in these high-stakes testing environments, and so that's what we're going to fund and support. All of which led to a massive dismantling of what we've traditionally called vocational education. In today's jargon, it's career technical education, or CTE.
So let's talk a little bit about that mentality and where that came from. It sounds like about maybe 20 years ago, this push to move all high school students into traditional four-year degrees was kind of really emphasized. And at the same time, programs that had supported vocational ed were actually disappearing, or the funding for those was disappearing. So where was this coming from? Who was pushing this idea that traditional college was the only way for anybody to go?
I mean, I'll take an initial pass at it. I don't think that none of it was ill-intentioned, right? I mean, I would say, you know, over time, there was this concept called tracking, right? Tracking. So within our high schools, even down to the middle school level, kids being pushed into certain directions, often based on their race,
economics,
or economics, where they came from. And there was an insidious nature to that. There's a systemic racist nature to a lot of that. There was a desire to swing the pendulum, right? Well-intentioned, I can say this, this is where I come from, well-intentioned liberal white educators saying we can no longer do that. If we have high expectations, we need to move students in this direction. Meantime, I would say, and I think you have to acknowledge this, some very influential national foundations, educational granting foundations, put out a lot of research and a lot of money toward this idea of college only as a social justice issue. Again, for all the right reasons, saying all the right things, but with some major blind spots.
What were the blind spots?
So college isn't necessarily a welcoming and supportive place if you don't walk in with social capital. And while on paper you can look at all the income data that shows that a college degree helps you, you know, we currently, so this is the result. We currently send 3/4 of Multnomah County high school graduates enroll in college after high school within a year and a half. They've enrolled. Only about 35% of them complete a degree. And so the blind spot was push them in. But there wasn't a more holistic vision of what are we moving them toward, both in terms of their ability to complete a certificate, but also the why behind that certificate or degree. This idea of career-connected learning is on a resurgence. There is a pendulum swing going on right now. But there really, I think there was a major blind spot to the structural deficiencies of many of our higher education institutions that just weren't ready to support students who didn't walk in with social capital, who didn't necessarily feel like they belonged. So I'd say that's one of many blind spots. So you had empty shops in high schools all over the community. You saw, you know, the average age over a period of a few decades of an apprentice coming in shifted from 18, 19 years old to today, where it's 28 years old for an incoming apprentice. And our apprenticeship programs, and really just as a community, beginning to look around and say, so what are these kids doing?
You have young people in high school on free and reduced lunch who are being sold an opportunity to go to college, and then they go home and tell their parents who can't afford lunch that they're going to college. They're going to fill out FAFSA. I'm going to college. It's not real practical in a lot of households for kids to come home talking about going to college. It's when you do a career fair and you hand out a spreadsheet on what you can earn and what the benefits are, the parents hardly ever see those. And when they see them, they don't believe it. We go into high schools, middle schools, and we say, how many of you know what your parents earn? A few hands go up. And when we say carpenters starting out at $18.36 an hour, how many of your parents are making more than that? No hands go up. So parents are having 2 and 3 jobs to support kids. They're on free and reduced lunch. They need to know about the trades. We have a few high schools that have taken their career fairs from 11 to 1 and 10 to noon and moved them to the evening hours to encompass school and evening so that we can get community folks in. The parents could come in and hear what we're pitching, because what they're being told is college is the only way for their kids to be successful, and that's not true.
I've been to high schools. In fact, I was at Park Rose, and I have a slide, and on one of the slides I show what the average debt a student going through a four-year college would end up at the end of the 4 years. And then I go into the slide of wages, working in the trades. And I had an instructor there stop. Like, he's like, hold on just a second. And he told all the students in the room, that's me. I've got $80,000 in debt. I've been working here 3 years. I'm making $24 an hour. I don't know when I'm going to be able to pay off $80,000 at $24 an hour.
I like to try and change that narrative when I go in front of the students at the different high schools in the area, And I tell them, this is the original four-year degree. This is the traditional path, not the four-year college path that we've been sold for decades and decades. I mean, I have students. I can't tell you how many students I have coming through our trades programs that have bachelors. We had one that had a PhD, and learned after earning a PhD that was not their career path. They went into the elevator constructors apprenticeship program, which is a great program, pays really well. Nothing like going through the PhD. Many years of, I wouldn't say wasted, but of course the person acquired a lot of knowledge going through that, obtaining the PhD. But where could they have been, right, had they learned about the trades programs? And I hear that all the time. All Hands Raised was there Wednesday at Swan Island Trade Center, and many students, when they had the opportunity to explain their experience at the trade center going through the pre-apprenticeship program, was had they learned that this was an option earlier, they would have taken this option a long time ago.
A big thrust of our work has been really digging. We talk about digging below the iceberg to what's the mentality, what are the mental models and the structures in our systems that are pushing all of our kids in one direction while we're really blind to the other direction. So a big thrust of our work has been about helping open people's eyes and people's minds, particularly the educators in our high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools, because you don't know what you don't know. And our educators, by definition, have followed a traditional college path to become educators. So, you know, last week we had one of our big events that Michael and Sal's organizations helped with, where we brought 250 public school teachers, counselors, administrators out to 30 industry sites so they could just feel it and touch it and be a part of it.
What you're saying is it's possible to be trained without going into debt and end up with very usable job skills that get you a good paying job. Is that correct?
That is correct. And one of the things I like to recall when we have these conversations is that somewhere 15, 20 years ago, the federal government, which funds a lot of the state-approved pre-apprenticeship programs, the alternative schools, there was a shift to no longer being interested in career paths other than college. So the funding that was being issued to these programs was tied to young people going to a two-year or four-year degree program. So that's what the programs geared themselves to, even though these kids were typically dropping out of public high school. The kids in alternative programs, they were structured to send these kids to a two-year or a four-year degree. Apprenticeship wasn't even on the agenda. At one point, about 6-7 years ago, Department of Labor shifted and allowed for the programs to count kids that were going into programs that offered apprenticeship. They could get a two-year degree at an associate's degree at a community college, and that would count as a success story.
When you go through a program, they want to make sure that you're going to stay in the program, because they're investing, they're paying for you to go through the program. Yeah. They're paying you. And on top of that, you may be earning a degree at the end of this, or really close to it.
We're investing in you.
Yeah. That whole paradigm of that people talk about, the brotherhood or the brotherhood, the sisterhood. I mean, imagine if every college student's tuition was covered by alumni paying back to that college exclusively.
Yeah.
That's what it is. These folks commit because they get it for free. Their dues, it is 100%. Yeah. It's classroom learning with professional teachers, 100% subsidized by their brothers and sisters who did it before them. There's something to that.
I have heard that a lot of the careers that involve the trades are actually needing people. They're hurting for people. Is that also true?
40% of our population are within 5 years of retirement.
I think the average construction worker is about 57 or 59.
55 something like that,
So 3-county metro region, Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas. Over the next 10 years, we'll add 13,000 new jobs in construction and manufacturing, which is a huge number in and of itself. But over that same time period, in that same footprint of the Portland metro area, we're going to have an additional 70,000 jobs open up due to retirement. So there's a wave. It's going to get more and more dire all the time. We continue to hear from contractors who are bringing tradespeople from out of state. And to us, with a social justice mission at the organization where I work, particularly focused on students of color, low-income students, communities we've always failed, it's an unfortunate and unnecessary disconnect in terms of pathways out of poverty for our local community. You know, we look at, you know, at a if you take a snapshot, Portland, people who live in Portland today are on average more highly educated. There's more bachelor's degrees, there's more college education than in most other places, but that's people largely like me who moved here with a bachelor's degree, right? It says nothing about what are we doing for the local pathway, the local educational pipeline. We're dropping people left and right, and you know it's connected to huge macroeconomic issues as well, with the polarization of wealth at the top, and this is a direct way of engaging and pushing against this disappearance of the middle class. There are middle class careers available in these pathways. And this, it's just unfortunate narrative where, you know, in prior decades, you could get a good job at the mill or wherever else with a high school degree. The narrative came forth that it's no longer the economy's changed, high school diploma's not enough, which is true, but the myth is when you say, therefore, traditional college. You do need training. If you're gonna get one of the good paying jobs in the trades, you need training. You need to get into a structured apprenticeship program that's gonna pay you to earn while you learn. But unfortunately, we slipped into that mentality of if you care about kids, you're pushing them to college or you don't believe in them.
What you're describing are programs that seem to be intellectually quite rigorous. And so that goes against the mentality that I think a lot of people have about the trades or about any path that doesn't involve going to a four-year school, which is that, oh, if you are not smart, that's where you end up. Where did that come from? Because it sounds like what you're saying is you really have to be on the ball to be able to go through this apprenticeship program.
You know, I really couldn't tell you where the idea came from that if you're not that smart, you go to the trades. That is your question, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah,
that's...
I mean, is that is my perception correct about
no,
that?
No,
that...
I think it is. It's been like that for since I can remember.
When I went to high school, I went to Benson, a four-year technical school. I took construction for 4 years. In order to have the opportunity to get into an apprenticeship, you were considered dumbing down. College was the answer. It wasn't the trades. However, we were in a school that was built by tradespeople, hospitals, all of these commercial buildings were built by people making great incomes. They had the ability to retire with dignity, but college was the pathway. If you talk to instructors before, I believe, All Hands Raised got involved, educating counselors and teachers and superintendents, they thought if you went to a trade, that was like joining the military. You go become a service, you join the military, you go to the trades because you're not considered college material. So it had that stigma.
The trades or the service sector was the fallback or the secondary option. If you're not fit for college, then those would be your options. But again, that's a myth that we've been sold. Huge opportunities within the trades, and definitely a misconception. Yeah,
part of the problem is our definition of smart. Really,
yeah.
I mean, I think it starts there. We have a brand of smart that is that was developed by white dominant institutional culture that's modeled around taking in and spitting out information, and we have so many students, whether they have a learning difference, whether they come from a different background or whether they just they're smart, their body's smart, their brain is smart, they know how to do stuff, and we just have this limited conception of smart, which isn't to say it's not hard and you need to know your math, you got to get up to speed, you got to know it, but you put your finger, I think, on one of the biggest problems, which is this conception that it's less than. And I deal with disappointed counselors when I get counselors and teachers out to industry sites, and they're like, wait, oh, but this is hard. Like, people want the silver bullet to start sending, you know, every student who ever struggled with anything before. A lot of the students who are struggling, yeah, they have an aptitude for this that you've never tapped into. Other students aren't going to be able to swing it, but it's exactly the same story as it is with college, right? It's the same.
The trades aren't for everyone, just like college isn't for everyone.
No, and I think part of both of your stories is that a high school counselor, teachers in high schools don't know what the trades encompass. They don't know that you take for the carpenters a class every 3 months. They don't know that you have lifelong learning throughout your career as a carpenter. You take apprenticeship classes, then you take continuing education classes. All of the trades today are geared toward technology.
Sal, you said that vocational schools were the original college. So before this shift, what was it like if, say, students were in high school?
I went to Benson. We had Foundry. We had light electrical, we had carpentry. Benson Tech Show was huge. We built a scaled down version of a house in the shop every year. We did concrete, there was sheet metal. I'm probably leaving out a few, but Benson was a premier technical high school. You had to have the grades to get in. It took students from all over the Portland area, PPS, but you had to have the grades to get in. So you could be exposed to all of the trades and then pick one you wanted to major in, and hopefully pursue that as a career path. There were hands-on every day. You built stuff. Kids learned to take pride in their work. There was no, if you were sloppy, you didn't move on to the next project. So there was a lot of pride in the work we did. And somehow along the way, that got lost. The trades were not really promoted in that school in terms of transitioning out. If you had a parent or a relative that was in the trades, you went into the trades because you knew about it. But they didn't talk about the apprenticeship program in school. They just taught you a craft, told you there was a future in it. But there was really no, like, bringing in people that were carpenters to talk to you about the industry opportunities. That didn't happen. They just sort of assumed that there was going to be a transition out of high school and into some sort of career path, whatever suited you. For example, I thought my dad worked at the post office, my mom was a nurse. So those were my limited views on what my career opportunities were at the time. And like all the rest of the kids I went to school with, that's what they thought. Your parents talked about college, but it was expensive. So you did what you could do, whatever you could do to earn some money until you figured out what you liked to do and what would pay you. Well, we've been a concerted effort through All Hands Raises efforts, through some of these programs that are working with kids that have dropped out of school to uplift the trades. You can earn while you learn, and there's lifelong learning involved in the trades. But it's been one of the best kept secrets in the country, especially in Oregon, because people just don't talk about the trades, even though they see people going to work every day. They make good money, they have great health care, they have great pension plans, but it's not being talked about in the schools. Paradigm shift. After one of those industry for a day, I think it was the first one. It was the superintendent of Centennial. Mm-hmm. When asked by Nate, what's your takeaway? He said, we need to have a paradigm shift in school. Everyone who works here went to college for longer than 4 years. So they all have degrees, and I'm asking them now to tell kids, you don't need to go to college and to be successful. So there's going to be a paradigm shift. We have to work on that. So it's a huge problem, but there's lots of us that are working on it.
I also reach out to industry and see how we can we can change the systems that we've, or barriers that industry might have erected. For instance, diversifying the workforce, that's a hot topic, of course. Figuring out how we can bring engage the younger generation and get them interested in trades, get them off of the devices and into, that's a hands-on type of thing. If we can get them working with their hands, but with tools, I found that we can engage them that way, and they are interested. We just have to provide that opportunity.
It's really interesting, as I'm listening to you, that there is a real devaluation of hands-on work, hands-on learning. That, you know, part of the focus on college prep is that it's all very mental without an application. And so I'm just wondering if you think that's true, that there's kind of a de-emphasis or a devaluation maybe of hands-on work, and why that might be.
There's certainly a devaluation of hands-on work. There was when I was growing up. Like I said earlier, working in the trades or in the service industry, that's your secondary or fallback option if you're not going to make it, if you're not, again, smart. We talked about that. If you're not smart enough, then you go into the trades or you go into the service sector and earn low wages, which is also not true. You don't earn low wages in the trades. Well, not the trades that I would work in. If you're earning low wages in a trade, then you're in the wrong trade, trade for sure. So yeah, there's definitely devaluation. I mentioned the hands-on, taking students from hands-on, from their devices to hands-on, because what I was experiencing bringing high school students in early on was that we were lecturing them to death. They were just 15 minutes into a two-hour long presentation about programs that can lead them into a trade. They were staring at the ceiling tiles and playing on their phones or messing with their buddy. And when I started to present to students, I asked that that I restructure. And I went into hands-on. So now what we're doing is, as all hands raised will attest to, that we bring students in straight off the bus and put them into a hands-on for about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes. So that'll kind of wake them up from a maybe 20, 30-minute bus ride in early in the morning. We wake them up straight into a hands-on project, and then maybe a 15 or 20-minute tour of the facility, and then another 15 minutes of an overview of what our programs, what programs we provide and how that can lead into the trades. And I can tell you that the feedback that we've received has improved drastically. It was going from, again, losing students 15 minutes into a presentation to about 83% feedback is a good or excellent experience. And the highlight, hands-on. So bringing high school students into hands-on facilities, exposing them to the trades, that's when they're gonna make the determination, is this for me or not, or is this an option for me that I wanna pursue or not, is exposing them to those hands-on opportunities.
I think in terms of devaluing the hands-on, I'll take another angle. I worked for a lot of years in a youth leadership development program, primarily with students who were first, maybe second generation in the country, primarily Latino students. And there definitely was a mentality or a strand of thought among parents, you know, I worked with my hands, so you don't have to, right? I spent my time toiling, often for low wages, because it's what I had to do and because I wanted to provide you an education. I might have made a treacherous journey from a different country to get you here so that you can get that education. And so the disconnect there is like, that's, I mean, that's somebody's truth. It's not about dismantling that truth. Like that is true. And many times, if not most, part of what was going on is those folks were locked out of the higher wage traits, the higher wage venues of working with your hand because of the old boy network and the white network and all that that we've referred to. So there's an aspect of exposure to the truth of the good trades, the solid pathways that families need too.
And part of that I discovered in my time with the carpenters is that in some countries, unions are bad. So when we roll up on a job site, we show them what they should be getting paid, the area standard, with the benefits, and they're not getting it. And then we say we're with the union, they shut down. Because in some countries, unions would kick the door down, take, you know, folks, take your possessions. So we've had to learn. It was a culture education for us, the carpenters, and how we are dealing with different folks from different parts of the world that come to work here. And all they're really looking for is to provide for their families, for kids to go to good schools, for them to have a future and good health care, and to be paid what they're worth. So it's a multifaceted problem that we're dealing with, but we're gaining ground. We have partners. And a piece I left out earlier is the collaboration. My wish is that more of us collaborate on what actually is going on in our communities and how to uplift families, get them off of welfare and into career paths that will actually serve them, that they would enjoy doing. It would be less of a burden on our penal system if kids had more options, right? So collaborating with municipalities, with school districts, with contractors who want to invest in their own futures without a skilled workforce coming up here pretty quickly, they're going to have trouble bidding jobs. So we need to collaborate, we need to educate, and then we need to have funds to support the efforts that we come up with.
It's always worth mentioning in our local footprint, Oregon Trades Women, a specific nonprofit organization. Yeah. The ratio of women in the construction trades is significantly higher in Oregon than it is nationally. When you talk about the local environment, that specific organization has been a major driver in that increase in rate. And it is largely, to go back to what we talked about, it is largely through pre-apprenticeship. So an environment of women learning with women, from women, talking the truth about what is it like on a job site and getting prepared not just to get in, but to navigate an environment that still is a male environment and sometimes a toxic male environment. So it's a shift that's, when you look at the fact that it's still single digit percentage, it's a shift that's early. But I would say the cat is out of the bag. In terms of, this is a phenomenal path for lots and lots of young women.
Historically, the trades were the FBI, friends, brothers, and in-laws. That's who got in. That's why it was such a best-kept secret for so long, is because if you didn't have a relative in the trades, you didn't get in. There was no sense in applying. If you're an outsider, you had no chance.
And the trades being a white male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
That's what are the chances of underserved communities and people of color being
or a woman.
Brought in?
It was, and has that changed?
Oh, it's changing. Yes. Yes.
And what about for women? Because friends, brothers, and in-laws was probably all men too, right?
It was all men. Yeah.
How is that changing?
The trades have become aware that not to have women is going to create a problem. And to be a site where you only have one woman, that's a problem. So the carpenters have done quite a bit around bringing women in. I think we have about 9%, 37% minorities in our program, 6,200 in this area. So we're doing a lot. We have outreach that targets women. We have outreach that targets low-income folks and people of color, underutilized, underserved folks. So we're doing a lot about it. And everywhere you go, municipalities are requiring women and ethnic minorities in addition to the apprenticeship numbers on these jobs. So we're working on it.
Child care is another huge yeah. issue, providing child care for women and fathers who have children and want to go into the trades. One thing I've been pushing is 24-hour child care. If you have a single parent or both parents working in the trades and they're off to work, my wife being a director at a child care facility, I know that they open at 6 and they close at 6:30. That's not the case for the trades. So where do they send their kids?
Harkening back to the trades as a gender equity strategy, the gender wage gap in construction, the cents on the dollar that women earn compared to men is significantly narrower in construction than it is in the economy as a whole. A lot of that driven by the fact that this concept of prevailing wages, or you earn what you earn as you advance through, and it's regulated. And I guess the thing that I would hope connects to, you know, both in terms of bringing young women as well as other populations that have just been locked out because of the whole family, friend, and neighbor FBI thing, is just that our public education system, our society's collective largest investment in moving kids from childhood to adulthood, can embrace this fact that the trades aren't for everyone, but they're for anyone. And I feel like that message getting out and the adults in our systems holding a stake in that can really turn the tide. And I frankly think it is beginning to turn the tide.